Chapter 15. The labyrinth was different here. While the passages behind the dressing rooms were cramped, these were almost spacious, the underground equivalents of thoroughfares. Odd items had drifted down from the world above. One corridor was lined with flats from various productions, laid end to end, so mountain scenery gave way to Darkland's jungle, then to the plasterboard flagstones and painted bloodstains of a dungeon, then to a storm-whipped seascape on springs, so it would roll behind a stage ship, then to the corpse-littered chaos wastes. Genevieve tried to remember which plays went with each canvas. She sensed her quarry was close. The box 7 smell lingered faintly, and she had better nostrils than true humans. Some of the painted scenes had dried slime smudges on them, indicating that the trapdoor demon used this path. She wondered if she should call out, or if that would drive Malvoisin further into hiding. Having spent so many of her years penned up in one way or another, she could imagine what kind of life the trapdoor demon had down here. What she couldn't imagine was him finding any other kind of life. Humans barely tolerated her, and were invariably hostile to any of her kind who shape-changed. It wasn't an unfounded prejudice, but it was also not entirely just. The passageway angled down and ended in a curtained chamber. She looked around for the trapdoor and found it, disguised as the top of a large barrel. Originally, the tunnel had had a ladder for human use, but that had mainly been scraped away, replaced by a set of protuberances that gave Genevieve an idea of what Malvoisin must look like. The smell was very strong, a whiff of dead fish and salt water rising from the depths. For now, she left the tunnel alone, replacing the barrel top. Today, she was going to search only the uppermost levels. She suspected Malvoisin might choose to loiter near the surface. She'd found many of his peepholes and been amused by the private rooms into which they afforded a view. Obviously, the trapdoor demon alleviated his solitude by taking an interest in the company of the Varga Bruegel Memorial Playhouse. She wondered how many of her own private moments had been overseen. From a peephole accessible if she stood on the barrel, she could see into a stockroom where, among the dusty wig stands and tins of face powder, she had once bled Detlef intimately. The red thirst had come upon her during a reception, and she had dragged her lover to this forgotten corner of the theatre, taking mouthfuls of his flesh and gently puncturing his excited skin, gorging herself until he was dangerously weak, a half dozen new wounds opened on his body. Had once human eyes witnessed her lustful gluttony? Retracing her footsteps to the last horizontal junction, she explored a new fork. Nearby, there was a rapid slithering, and she darted in its direction, her night sight enabling her not to slam into a wall. She didn't call out. Something large was moving fast. The slithering turned a corner, and she followed it. There was no movement of air, so she guessed this was a closed space. She came to a wall and stopped. She couldn't hear anything now. Looking back, she realised she'd been fooled. They didn't call Malvoisin the trapdoor demon lightly. Somehow, he'd slipped into the walls, ceiling or floor, and escaped her. However, she was canny, and she had time. The Animus let Eva guide it to the theatre, with Reinhardt as thoroughly in tow as if he were a pig led by a brass ring through his nose. From Eva, it had learned that destroying Detlef and Genevieve wasn't enough for its purpose. Before they died, they must be broken apart. The bond forged at the fortress of Drachenfels sundered completely. That way, they'd die knowing nothing lasting had come of their triumph. The Animus was grateful for the new insight, realizing at last that it hadn't been prepared to do its master's bidding until it joined with its current host. The great enchanter must have foreseen this when he forged the Animus, realizing his creature wouldn't be whole until it was partially human. It was gathering about itself the tools it needed. Eva, of course, was the key. But others, Reinhardt, Ilona, the trapdoor demon, even Detlef and Genevieve themselves, must play their parts. For Eva, the Animus was very like Detlef, conceiving a drama and then guiding his company through their parts. The Animus was not above being flattered by the comparison. Created as a cold intellect, it bore the vampire and the play actor no malice. It just knew that their destruction was its purpose. From Eva, it had learned a considerable respect for Detlef Sieck's prowess as a man of the theatre. Eva left Reinhardt at the Temple Street Gymnasium for his afternoon exercises, knowing he would come when needed. The host had her own purpose, distinct from that of the Animus. For the moment, their ambitions meshed neatly. If a conflict ever arose, each was confident of victory over the other. The Animus let Eva go on, thinking she was in control. Outside the theatre, there were three distinct crowds. The largest was an unruly queue at the box office, demanding seats for The Strange History of Dr. Zykel and Mr. Chaida. A few well-known touts were preying on these, charging unbelievable prices for genuine tickets and slightly more credible coin for badly forged imitations which would never pass Guglielmo Pentangeli's ushers. Competing with the eager would-be patrons was a line of placard-waving petitioners, mostly well-dressed matrons and thin young men in shabby clothes, protesting against the play. One placard was a vivid poster of Detlef as Mr. Chaida, showing him as a giant trampling over the murdered citizens of Altdorf. Since the last host's death, the protests had increased fourfold. As Eva neared, the third crowd were aroused to activity. These she was gradually becoming used to. There were liveried footmen with floral offerings and billets doux and formal invitations, and well-dressed young men keen to pursue their suits in person. Besides romantic overtures, Eva Savinian was daily pestered by professional offers from all over the empire and as far off as Britannia and Kislev. There could be no doubt that the young actress was the toast of Altdorf. Graciously accepting flowers, invitations and letters, Eva passed through the crowd, politely fending off the more persistent suitors. Slipping through the front door, she immediately dumped her crop of tributes into the arms of Papa Fritz, who staggered under the burden. She would go through the letters later. "You should start sending your flowers to the retreat of Shalya," a voice said. It was Ilona. Eva turned, squashing a mouse of irritation in her mind. She didn't want this distraction now. "That's what I did in the last century when I was in your position. Flowers move you out of your dressing room and are no real use. The patients at the hospital will at least get something out of them." "A good idea," Eva agreed. "Thank you, Ilona." "We should talk, Eva," the older woman said. "Not now." Ilona looked sharply at Eva, eyes penetrating. It was as if she knew something, saw something. The Animus knew this was not possible. Not now.
"Take care, Eva.
You've charted a dangerous course. Lots of squalls and shallows, rocks and whirlpools." Eva shrugged. This was most tiresome. Ilona had fixed her with a look, making a strong link chain between them.
"I was your age once, you know."
"Naturally, most people were.
And one day you'll be my age. The gods willing, Yes.
That's right, the gods willing. The chain between them broke, and Eva bowed slightly.
This has been most enlightening, Eva said. But if you'll excuse me.
She left Ilona in the foyer and went in search of Detlef. The animus could taste the nearness of its purpose.